Welcome to the All Wheels Rolling podcast. My name is Mark Hamilton and I'll be your host. We are powered by Bourgeois Midland Nissan. They are part of the Bourgeois Auto Group. You can see their new and used inventory online at bourgeoisnissan.com. The Crank and Sprocket at crankandsprocket.ca for your bicycle needs in Orillia. And christinepratt.ca for all your physiotherapy needs. christinepratt.ca. Hope you enjoy, folks. First up, we have Jamie Herbst. Jamie started cycling competitively in the 8th grade after inheriting a hand-me-down Bianchi from his older brother Mark, who was competing for triathlons. This was in the early 80s, the day of leather helmets, wool jerseys, toe clips, and 10 gears. The first events were weekly time trials on Ridge Road and fantastic local interclub races, which were run in the Australian pursuit style. Being a local bike shop groupie eventually led to an offer of employment, and most of the paychecks were quickly signed over to feed the addiction of a cyclist, kind of like working for a drug dealer for a fantastic discount. In the late 80s, mountain bikes arrived on the scene, and the hope of an actual paycheck diminished even further. Flash forward to today, Jamie currently splits his time between road, trails, gravel, and Mattamy Velodrome. Currently, Jamie's time is split between roads, trail, gravel, and Mattamy Velodrome. After 37 years, he is still riding weekly with his lifelong bike shop friend, Oren Bowser. Which brings us to our next person, Oren Bowser. Cycling has been a lifelong passion for Oren. He started riding racing BMX in 1979 and helped build the Barrie track in 82. He has a box of second and third place trophies to prove it. At 12 years old, he started working at Bikeland, where he met Jamie. When Jamie started there a few years later. They've now been riding together weekly for 37 years so far. Through Morgan Lemon, the owner of Bikeland, Oren got into time trialing, road racing, and building and competing at human-powered vehicle events. Then in the late 80s, he started mountain biking and going to events and races. When enough people in town got mountain bikes, he would lead mountain bike rides, group rides at Sunnydale Park. In the spring of 2015, at the Pan Am Games, Oren suggested to Jamie that they should get certified at the Velodrome in Milton. What he thought would be a one-off fun day has turned into an amazing cycling experience. Nowadays, Oren, with balancing family life, he mainly does road riding, with winter split between track and Zwift. Oren would describe his training program as a lifelong classic weekend warrior. These guys have just a depth of knowledge that is fairly unmatched for being friends for that long. We ran a little long on this one, but it seemed worth it, and hopefully we'll have some more chats. Hope you enjoy, folks. Okay, welcome to the show. I've got Oren Bowser and Jamie Herbst. You guys have known each other and been riding together for 37 years, which is a pretty monumental. It's a monumental feat to even know someone for 37 years, but the fact that you guys have been riding together for 37 years is incredible. Where did you guys meet?
We met at Bikeland,
where
everybody meets.
Which blows my mind, because I didn't know that Bikeland had been open that long.
Oh, yeah.
Only that, you know, I wasn't into biking back then.
So. Yeah, in fact. Ooh. How long?
Morgan bought it in 77.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
He was going before that.
Okay.
Small world. My dad's wife's ex-husband owned Bikeland before Morgan.
Wow.
Dad's wife's ex-husband, cousin's dog's dentist.
The only name I could have given you as a kid that was a bike shop was Pool Brothers.
Another story. My dad worked at Pool Brothers.
Really?
When he was a teenager, yeah.
That's cool.
It was bike shops and vacuum cleaners, I believe.
TVs. You can fix a TV,
too. Vacuum cleaners later.
Yeah. Every time I go by that on Bayfield Street, yeah. I think Pool Brothers.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Chris Pool.
Chris Pool was the nephew, and the uncle, two uncles owned it.
So what were, obviously I know what bikes are today in a bike shop. What was the big seller when you guys started at Bikeland?
You could get a road bike, or you could get a road bike. Or you could get a road bike if you wanted.
They had just invented 12 speeds. Ooh. And that was, wow. And they were the price of a car.
12 speeds? Why would you ever need 12?
Was it one by or two by? It was one by, or two by, sorry.
Yeah. Two by.
No,
two by,
they had triples for touring, but okay. We didn't sell those. We had two by, and people, what hasn't changed in the bike industry is they're always the price of a car. $600. I can get a car for that. You go to a bike shop now and it's, I can get a car for that. And that has never changed.
Well, in our current climate, buying used is the price of a new car. Because people are taking advantage of the supply demand we're in.
I remember Greg Hardy got his mountain bike and it was the first one.
Specialized stump jumper.
Stump jumper, and probably still riding it. And that was at the old location. I remember it, and that was in 79.
That, wow. So that was an early, early mountain bike.
79 or 80, yeah.
Yeah, probably around 80.
Were your thumbs touching?
Oh, no. These are the great big bars with the triangle welded into the, so the stem and the bar had a triangle welded in.
Okay.
And, yeah.
So you guys have obviously seen quite an evolution of bikes in general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, huge. They were all steel in the early days at Bikeland, which was great because they were so packed in to this tiny back room at Bikeland. Someone would come in, their bike had been there for months, and you'd see it, and it was way at the back. But they weren't hanging on racks. They were just, like, in this room. And you would, like, step top tube to top tube to top tube to go back. It was like a three-man job. Just
shove them forward, pull it out. It was fun.
And you'd have someone to distract so they weren't watching you while you stepped from top tube to top tube. You wouldn't want to do that now.
No. Just be plastic on the floor.
Sometimes they came in and helped.
And then 15 minutes later, that's not it.
It had a black seat.
Yeah. I like when La Bicicleta, they post sometimes on their Instagram feed some of the older bikes that come into the shop. It's pretty cool to see some of the stuff that they service.
Yeah, I stopped in at Bikeland a couple times over the summer and wore a mask, of course. And every time I was there, there was an antique in the stand that was just remarkable, like a barn find. And people were dusting it off and putting a set of tires on it and riding it. Like, every time there's a different one. And these are 10-speed bikes with a little corn cob, but they're an Italian... whatever machine, like a wall hanger, but they're pulling it out to go ride.
You know what? That's the stuff I love now, though. I like seeing the old stuff.
I took a picture every time.
And the brazes and the equipment on the things, because honestly, $10,000 carbon bikes are like a dime a dozen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, $10,000, yeah. But
they're all good bikes, but some of them are more interesting than others.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Just it's more intriguing, I guess. Well, nostalgia, maybe.
It's the boy in us or something.
I went to the downhill event they had, the three-day thing at Horseshoe. And it was cool to see Andrew Watson knew some of the guys, and he called them, like, original, like, downhillers. And they had, like, the big spring on it. Like, it was a 1980s bike.
Oh,
downhill,
wow.
And they had pulled it out.
Was that the event? Was it some kind of vintage event?
No.
Oh, okay.
Like, kids came along in their life or whatever,
yeah.
And that's the last downhill bike they had, so... It was a downhill event. I haven't worn one of those in a while. And dust it off, fix it up, and out it came. So it was cool to see, like, you had the $10,000 downhill bikes, and then you had something from 1980, which some people would just laugh at.
That would be from the 90s. The 80s,
okay.
We didn't have suspension.
Okay, so 90s then. Yeah. It was cool to see.
Yeah. In fact, the downhills, there was downhills, but there was no suspension. Except for Dave Jack's off.
You would buy add-on suspension. When RockShox first came out, the Black Fork, if anyone had it, they'd know. And we ordered it in, put it on. And we're putting it on bikes that aren't made for suspension. So steering was really rough after that.
Yeah.
But we had it. And it was fun.
You guys have any of your vintage bikes? Like?
Oh, yeah. All of them.
You have all your bikes?
I do not have all my
okay.
bikes. I have a wife. And, I Although the plan is you give them to your like nieces and nephews and stuff, and then if you want them, you go back and borrow it back.
Right.
I did that a couple of years ago with an old Pro Flex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I gave one to my dad and I took it back. So it didn't disappear.
I do have some bikes hanging in the lower shed that probably shouldn't be getting rid of. But
how many do you have total?
Bikes?
Yeah.
Ask Warren first and I'm going to count while he's thinking.
Warren, what do you got? Have you never sold one or given it away?
I sold my BMX and I regretted it. I just kept them. I don't know why. I just
How big is the stable you have for all these bikes?
It's a bunch. I did sell a couple mountain bikes, but I don't sell them anymore. Anyway, so I've got about 3 mountain bikes, all vintage. Even the one I ride is vintage now, you would consider it. 3 road bikes. One would be very vintage. Unicycle.
Track bike.
Oh, a track bike and a fixie.
Nice. I think I've seen your mountain bike out at Copeland. It's 26er?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, that's it. It's nice. Light.
It's nice, yeah.
It's 23 pound mountain bike. So that's, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Never mind, I have rim brakes. Nobody wins with brakes.
That's right.
I think I've got about, I don't know, about 8 or 9 going.
8 or 9? Like,
but a couple honestly just hang there, which is a shame.
Yeah.
But the reality is you go, I know what I could get for these, and I'm not selling it for that, right? Yeah. Maybe now, maybe this year wouldn't have been the time to do it, but I missed the boat on that.
Yeah.
But again, like, I have an old Specialized S-Works Epic that I bought from Andrew Watson. I love that. It's a 26er. I love that bike, and it's so much fun to ride. I have a newer one, but I just can't give that one.
But it's kind of like, I think Adam Hill has, he'd been using a Norco for a lot of years. It's either a road, it must have been a road bike, I think. And then kind of converted it to a gravel bike. Well, he's kind of savaged all the parts off it. He's still got the frame. But he's got some pretty monumental podiums with it. And just, I mean, hundreds of hours.
You spend a lot of time with them.
Yeah, so I think he's kept it just as a keepsake, hanging up on the wall sort of thing.
Yeah.
As long as you have room, you just sort of put it there.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
Not in this room. There's nothing wrong with that. No.
No. I even have an old Cervelo frame that actually I cracked it being an idiot in a vise, like in a workstand clamp.
Okay.
And then I sent it out and got a guy to patch it up, and it's hanging on the wall. I'm like, well, I'm going to build that thing back up. Put it on the trainer if nothing else, right?
That's a good Frankenstein bike. And put it on the trainer, you won't have to worry about your other bike.
I know.
Do you guys still tinker with your bikes, or do you... Is time precious now and you just take it to a shop?
I fix it.
Yeah.
I take it to the shop and fix it.
Yeah. Can it stand free? Can I borrow that? Thanks. And all the tools are there and there's a legacy that way.
Part of
right?
the alumni of Bikeland.
I feel like that happens when you talk to a few people who've worked at Bikeland. They always seem to go back just to check in.
Oh, best job ever.
Or,
best job ever.
Whatever. Yeah.
And you look at the people, the kids that are working there now, and you're like, you don't know how good you got it.
You'll figure it out.
Yeah, you'll find out later when you're not here anymore.
Yeah. It's sort of the who's who of who works at bike shops, because, I mean, you guys obviously have been going back ever since you've been there. Like, there's some pretty high-level riders who pass through the doors of Bikeland.
Yeah, there's Lex Albrecht, who's been riding pro for years now. She worked there.
A pro in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Continental Pro, and then Jen Jackson. He's in and out of there. And Morgan's so good about that stuff.
I think, mm-hmm. Ian Watson worked there.
He's the easiest guy to work for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. O'Donnell was there.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Trevor's O'Donnell was there.
Up until just recently.
When we were there, Rob Crossan used to work there a little bit, and he was like Canadian national slalom champion for 7 years and been to a couple Olympics and stuff like that.
Cool.
So I don't know what it is about that
place. It's just, good place to be.
It is in the water. Don't drink the water there.
So, do you guys have a favorite bike out of the 37 years? Is your current bike your favorite one, or?
Yeah, it's the fastest.
You know what? I have an open gravel bike, and if I had to like get rid of all my bikes and choose one, I would pick that. I love that bike, the gravel bike. You can just go anywhere on it.
I would probably do the same, but I'd have to get an open gravel
bike.
You're the second person who has one. Adam's the other one.
Yeah.
And same color.
Loves it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that bike.
Yeah.
It's great.
Is yours 2x?
Mine's 2x. He's on a 1x. And I was talking to him like a couple weeks ago, and he's like wishing he had done a 2x.
Yeah. I think that'll be.
And it's funny because I was looking at him going, gee, I wonder if I should go 1x. But no, I got it. I got dialed in, I think.
Yeah.
I could never do that.
1x?
Never.
No, I know.
But your mountain bike must be. 26er. Is it 1x? No.
It's a triple.
Triple? Yeah. Wow. See, I don't know. I'm fairly new to biking, so it's all new.
Yeah, I can't get my head around 1x. Even from a maintenance standpoint, you have that long derailleur and the big pie plate on the back. It's hard to keep that vertical. My bike, I haven't done anything to it in 3 years. I pump up the tire and I hop on it and I ride it. Not a lot of mountain bikes you can do that with.
I scratch my head with that whole huge pie plate of a cassette at the back. I'm going, how is that logical?
Even
because it's rotating weight, and those things are heavy as heck. Unless you buy the $500 one, they last a season.
Yeah,
right. If you're lucky.
Mm-hmm. I don't like the big jumps.
It just seems like it's certainly not economically viable for most of for me anyway. I shouldn't speak for other people.
No. I think when I have the Eagle and I went to replace that, and Jared said to me, which cassette do you want? And I said, well, what's the difference?
I want to keep my car, so give me the next one down.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge difference in weight, for sure.
Yeah.
But he said, they're going to last you the same amount of time. And I'm like, well, let's go for the...
Yeah. And how much was that?
It was a few $100.
Yeah, and it wasn't the high-end one.
No, I think the low-end one was, I want to say... $200 or maybe more.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Figure that whole. I mean, yeah, so you save the weight of a front derailleur, I guess, and the hassle of a front derailleur, but
no.
Now you have massive rotating weight on
should
the back and
learn
it's
how
expensive.
To,
yeah.
Learn how to shift your gears and get some finesse.
Yeah. I don't know, the pro circuit probably disagrees with you, but I mean, who knows?
Oh, yeah.
Well, guys who don't pay for it.
They're stronger than me. They,
yeah.
they don't need
That's
it.
True. Yeah.
Warner's always good for that. Hey, you, come back here so I can give you some advice.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Hey, fast guy, come back and I'll tell you what you're doing wrong.
But I mean, there's nothing wrong with any of that. And any bike, 26 or whatever. Like, the one that pops to mind recently would be Josh. He started coming out to BCC with, was it 3 in the front? I'm not sure. It was a gravel bike.
Gravel bike, yeah.
And he put slicks on to ride with the road, and everyone was giving him the gears, you know, pun intended there, but about, you know, you got to get a road bike. You can't ride that thing.
Oh,
well, sure.
So it was supposed to be, Josh bought that bike, I think, as a be-all, do-everything bike, right? Oh, you could tour on this. I'm going to do some triathlons on it. It's good on the road. And then Josh just got stronger and stronger on that bike, and I was like worried about the day he did get a new bike because I thought,
yeah,
oh,
I would tease him about it. Like, I hope you don't get a new bike.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's a great bike, Josh. Never give it up. Never give it up. Because if you did get a new bike, you'd never be able to keep up with it.
It's new bike's beautiful.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Haven't seen him all year.
I think someone had told me...
I see him on Strava.
I think he's had a little bit of back issues, so hasn't been riding quite as much.
Should have kept his old bike.
Way more comfy. Slow down.
I don't know, did he end up taking that old bike to Europe? Because he went with a bunch of BCC folks over to France.
With Chris and the gang. Did he do a couple trips or one trip?
I'm not sure.
Don't remember. You'll have to ask him.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Josh, you're listening. We'll catch up soon. So, ride style obviously has changed over the years. What currently is your favorite type of riding?
All roads. So road, gravel, trail, just go anywhere type thing. Avoiding traffic is basically it.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever that takes me is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've moved out. I did live in East Edinburgh for years and years, and I recently, in the last couple of years, moved out to Horseshoe. So I find myself riding over towards north, towards Coldwater and all that way. They're beautiful roads.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Just
a little less traffic.
There's a lot less traffic.
Yeah.
I can ride for 2 or 3 hours and see 5 or 6 cars.
Sure.
So it's been great. I split my time so equally, though. Like, honestly, I go up my backyard and I'm onto the trails at Copeland, and I'm just loving what's going on right now.
We used to ride regularly to Creemore, and we still do, but it's getting busy. and we might get squeezed out of that eventually.
There's some squeezed out of it because just close calls on the road.
It's a little aggressive, actually.
A lot of traffic. A lot of traffic.
Yeah.
You know, eventually it's not restful, and if we have other options like cold water area, we'll just start doing that. We used to ride a lot of places that we don't ride or even think to ride anymore. Even recently down into Ennisville, some people still do, but it's a lot of commuter traffic now. But we grew up riding in Ennisville because that's where the good roads were.
Yeah. You could ride your own Huronia or Veterans or all those roads. Yeah. And
we would do little circuit races around down Huronia and up Veterans with a group.
Sure.
I don't think you would do that today.
No, I would
not live.
One of the first times with Richard Gowdy and a couple other folks. And it was nice until traffic kind of hit. We went a little bit before dinner time. But then, so we headed south, and then coming back up, obviously with traffic, it certainly was busy, that's for sure. And Innisfil's just never really been on my radar. I'm more at the north end, so I can kind of
I'm with you.
Head out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have a friend that lives in the south end, the ninth line in Innisfil. He'll literally just drive over here to start his ride.
Yeah.
This is just. Skip all that and get to the part you want to do.
Yeah, and I think the county has a long-term approach of county roads will get bike lanes when they upgrade them.
Oh, interesting.
But that's, anything that's not on the books already. So if it's on the books already, forget it. But, anything that's probably in the pipe for probably five years won't get it. But after that, then it should. So
I've heard this for a while, but I haven't seen it.
Well, I think that's
a slow process.
Yeah,
I
we're
still sure.
years away from getting any of those to flush through the system that'll finally happen.
The county roads are very, very slow compared to which one? The county or the municipality? Ridge Road is one, and 1516 is another.
1516 is Oro. Ridge, I think, is Oro.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, I think the township owns those and. They've done a little bit of 1516 out, I think around 11.
Yeah.
But those roads used to be all gravel. Like we grew up, you could ride very few of those roads. And then the current, he's been there forever. Mr. Terry Hughes, I think, said, let's pave this stuff. And it's been a mecca, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, beautiful roads.
Yeah.
I think the feedback Brendan's been getting at the county is, and he's been pushing, is gravel's super popular and...
rip it up. Could we rip up now? That pavement? Yeah, let's get some gravel roads. Some of them feel like
there's
it anyway.
There's no point in doing that.
Yeah, it's a joke. But the Simcoe Loop Trail, again, I ride that several times a year now. They do that loop because that's again, another beautiful ride, right?
Yeah, it links
and no traffic.
Some nice parts.
Mm-hmm. Well, so the debate point is clockwise or counterclockwise?
I've only done it once. I've only done it the one way, not once.
Oh.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to going counter. Never done it.
Yeah, just the clockwise I've done.
Yeah.
So you guys are starting Barrie?
I've started in Barrie. I started at Snow Valley. The first time I think I did, we started at Snow Valley. That was all the Trans Canada Trail celebration inaugural one.
Yep.
And then I like to start in cold water now. Start and finish in cold water.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds nice.
It's great.
I like knowing more familiar roads when I'm running on fumes. So like, okay, I can budget for what I've got left.
Yeah.
I find that works for me.
I think it's pretty key. And I mean, obviously you guys have been in this area forever. You know sort of where the convenience stores are or the free water. Like Elmville has the thing with the sixth line up by Ingram has a free water spout.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta kind of know those because sometimes... if you get a little deep in your ride, then you...
That's true. Although I somehow can't bring myself to stand in line for water in Elmville. You get off your bike and stand in line. No, I'm just kidding. I'll just go pay for a bottle. And I hate bottled water. I hate the idea of bottled water, but I don't. I guess don't like standing in line more.
If we're together, we usually try to buy a big one or, combine. We don't buy a bunch of little ones. We try to economize it a bit.
Sure.
That's the whole idea of... if you told your grandfather, people would be paying for water.
Yeah.
And a body would laugh.
Yeah.
We rode past Wasaga this summer, and the parks were open, and the taps were on in the bathrooms, so we filled up
there. Yeah, and a window was on, too.
Yeah, the tap was so on. They're around if you think ahead. You'll find them.
Yeah.
What are you ready to do?
I'm out of water. Oh, no. I think more and more people are using stuff like Strava or Map My Ride or whatever to kind of plot out roughly what the route's going to be, and then, you know, there's always few people who don't know that, say, the fifth line bridge is out or ninth line's out.
I went over yesterday.
Ninth, I think, was one.
Ninth is in.
Okay.
Fifth, the guys were putting in the guardrail.
Okay.
And it was paved. I went through. I talked to them.
You talk nicely.
I talk nicely. Say, you almost done. Went through.
Nice.
It'll probably be fully open this week.
Oh, that's great. That's good. A little bit faster than the Thunder Bridge there on Ridge Road.
Yeah, it's the easiest way up to high country.
Yeah, for sure. So you guys also go to the track. And Oren, you and I had a discussion last week before, just probably not maybe going to the track as much this year.
Yeah, well, with COVID, it's hard to social distance on an indoor group ride.
Yeah.
He's lying. He's so fast. There's no one near that guy. He's social distancing. He calls it social distancing. He's kicking their butts.
Yeah.
This is not true. There's some very talented people at that facility, both running it and riding it. They are open for coach training through, what's the group called?
NCCP?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
And they're
adult and youth, I think.
Yeah, adult and youth. They started with youth in the summer, very specialized. So these are high caliber riders that are needing a facility like that. They don't have, it's not open for drop-ins and open sessions or learn to ride.
It's just structured training.
I know one guy from Waterloo that's been going. And they have a couple different levels. They have the intermediate and the advanced. I don't think they have the moto out.
I don't think they're doing any motor pacing.
I don't know what kind of events they're doing. I think it's mostly spaced out. So you're doing efforts on the track together, but you're not necessarily in a group.
Yeah. It looked odd because it's a multi-use building. And normally, I've only been there a couple times, but they have like the basketball and all the nets set up.
Yeah,
it's huge. And that's going, but on that Lionel Sanders thing that he did yesterday, it was kind of odd to see, like, the infield was stark. Like,
it's nice when
you have you tried to play pickleball with a mask on? It's not easy, man. You have to shut that pickleball court down. It's a really well-used facility, though.
Yeah. It's always busy, so the fact that it's sitting there empty is always busy.
It's badminton, basketball, soccer.
One after another.
Softball sometimes. Softball. Really, all kinds of stuff in there. Pickleball, right. I was not kidding you. They do that quite a bit too.
Badminton's cool.
Yeah.
And when you bring all these sports together, it brings all different types of people together as well. And different age ranges.
Yeah.
Young kids playing basketball are very excited.
I think it's cool that, you know, kids in Barrie would never see track cycling. So if in Milton, you know, high schoolers are going there for basketball, and they got exposed to watching people go and rip it at 40 plus.
A lot of people still don't know it's there. They have no idea. You ride that on the track. Where the heck is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's one in Milton. Really?
There's been a couple young riders that have gone there, one that actually lived there, and now have gone on to the national team. And you wonder how they built this facility, and there's this guy come along, Michael Foley.
Hmm.
And go from, hey, they built this in my backyard, now I'm on the pursuit team.
That's cool.
That's really amazing. Build it and they'll come, I guess.
It's funny.
Without that opportunity, just be nothing.
Yeah. I don't know if you know the name Tory Nyhog. He's a Canadian. He got bronze at the 2016 Olympics for BMX.
Oh, okay. So this is a BMX guy, right?
Yeah, BMX guy. He posted a photo today of the BMX track in Rio, like a ghost town. It's all trashed. Like, no one's used it the last day they had the event, that's the last time someone was there.
Hmm.
4 years later, it looks serious need of repair. And I think it's cool that, you know, they built that velo for the Pan Am, or I'm assuming that's why they built it.
That's right.
And then it has that legacy that it lives on, and that kids will get exposed to that.
Yeah, I think it's a tenuous legacy. Like, I think that infield frequently, let's face it, it pays for that, right? Mm-hmm. I'd put enough riders on there to pay for that track.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
The track's the expensive part. The rest of it, I think, is paying for it. Although, we do our share.
Yeah.
As master riders, we're subsidizing it as best we can with all our energy.
But don't you think that's kind of all racing inevitably becomes that? Like, even at the O Cup mountain bikes, there's not enough elites to pay for prize money for the elites. It's the masters, groups that are 100 deep or 80 deep. They're paying for the elites. And
I think that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the facility itself probably has a massive amount of more than we would know, right? Because you look at Montreal, 76 Olympics, right? They built that velodrome.
Yeah.
And I got on that once, which was lucky because now it's like a biodome, right? It's a science center.
And
they actually ripped up the wood and sold it to another country.
Really?
So they reused the wood.
Mm-hmm.
But that was gone.
Interesting.
Takes some planning.
And you can't put it back. Like, it's when that facility's gone, it's gone. It's,
yeah.
They've worked at building this velodrome in Milton for years and years. It was going to be in Hamilton. It was going to be here and there. And they were always sort of chasing around the funding until the Pan Ams came along. That finally focused it into a location and focused the money, and it came about.
Mm-hmm.
It hadn't been for that, it wouldn't have been at all.
Yeah, I think I heard Peterborough even was one of those locations that it was a possible might be, and then just never.
I think it's in a good location.
Probably better in Milton than Peterborough.
For sure.
I love Peter Patch, but that's a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty central. It ticks a lot of boxes for a lot of different areas to get there.
And it is well used, because there's times when you'd go to register for something, and I got to get on that faster, it'll be full.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So that still happens, which is great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In peak season, sort of starting mid-November to right through to March, it's busy.
Yeah.
If you're not booking early enough, like a week or so ahead, you might not get there. So you gotta be really keen.
No, that's excellent. So failing that this year then, what's fitness looking like for you fellas?
Poor.
You love Zwift. Oren's already on Zwift, and I
really?
Will refuse to do that as long as I can. When it's there, I love it. Don't get me wrong, but I'd love to be outside. So I'll ski as much as I can cross country.
I started riding with some guys in Waterloo, so I go to work there once a week. And then we started riding the velodrome together. And so I've just sort of kept up with them. And now they're on Zwift and we're doing Discourse. And
that course.
That course? Discourse?
Discourse and that course.
Discourse, that course. And so they started it. So I was like, oh, it's a little bit early, but there's kind of a group going. So
yes.
I'll go.
So do you do the group? Do you dabble a little bit?
I am new to Zwift last year.
Okay.
It's one of those things. I'm like, this is the stupidest thing. Who's going on? Oh, man, this is pretty fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've been like that with a lot of stuff.
I wasn't really sold on it.
I'm very critical of things, and then I choose to change my mind.
That's okay. Watson got me on to Discord, so I thought that helped.
Yeah, Discord.
And,
Discord. Got it.
Yeah, that's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It was funny. And doing like some group rides where it's kind of a no drop thing.
Yeah, you get tethered.
That's good. Although I will say I enjoy the racing aspect of it. And I've only done a couple.
I've never done one.
I've done a couple crits, but
crits
I blew up so bad.
Well, that's what everyone tells me, which is like I don't even have an incentive to race because I'm like, everyone cheats, and if you're not warmed up for 45 minutes, you're dead. I'm like, that sounds like fun.
Not quite. But you want to learn how to soft pedal in the group.
Yeah.
And honestly, when I first tried it, I didn't even have a smart trainer, right?
Okay. Okay.
So I was killing myself.
That'd be impossible.
Right? It was, well, yeah, it was interesting. Yeah. So I'm getting there. It is great.
If you're hoping to win, don't enter. But if you're just looking for some fun, it's okay.
Do you ever watch another race, like when you're not on?
Never. I saw that as an option. I thought, who would do that?
So I did once. I did once. But I didn't have Zwift. I knew nothing of it. But Andrew Watson sent out a link. It was the Canadian Nationals. And it was just going to be like a spreadsheet, basically, of watching like live timing results.
Wait, you're watching a spreadsheet?
Basically. Oh. It was freaky, but it was kind of cool. Like,
but if you didn't know that person, dry. Why would you?
Well, I knew Trevor O'Donnell was at the front of the group. Watson was at the front of the group, and Lionel Sanders. Those were the three names that I knew. And maybe another one.
He probably had like tri-bars on, though.
Probably. But the wattage that they were putting out, and I only watched it for a few minutes, but the wattage just seemed absolutely insane. Like, not even, it didn't mimic a road ride.
No.
Like, it's not, you can't look at Zwift and say, well, it's just like the road. In my mind, I don't think that's...
It's condensed. It's really distilled down to all the hard efforts.
I think the pain is still very real, though, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, the discomfort is still very real. It's not virtual discomfort. Mm-hmm. It's real discomfort.
Yeah.
You have to have a willingness.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what, their motivation was. I think, I want to say the average speed was close to 50K an hour.
Yeah, see, that's...
The speeds are wonky on Zwift. You can't...
I think they do that just to make people feel better.
I think
it's like, look how fast I'm going.
But that, I think that actually is why they do that.
I think there's some people who have said even the wattage is higher and the speeds are higher.
I find their workouts to be a little bit much, too.
Yeah?
Like, I think they switch them around a little bit just to make you feel like you're getting... more effort, but I find they drag you out of your zone. Like, you set your FTP and then you're doing it, but it's like, I'm overshooting this way too far.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. So you're going to try it a little bit?
You know what? I do it in the winter, right? And let's face it, it's those transition seasons, right? There's not enough snow to ski, and what else are you going to do? So it's great. It's a good thing. And I did some structured training on it last year. But I don't use the Zwift training. I just do my own.
Yeah.
So I'll put it in erg mode or something.
Yeah.
You can upload the workouts to that. And that's been, I think it's great.
Yeah.
It goes by a lot quicker.
Yeah. Surprisingly so.
Yeah. Do you guys have rollers?
Yep.
I don't anymore. I used to have some rollers. Yeah.
They're at the track.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry, dude. They're hanging at the track.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So they've been there since last March, along with my shoes.
Really?
Well, you couldn't get in to get your stuff back.
Right. Oh, son of a gun.
Brand new shoes is in there.
No way.
Still new.
Well, hopefully they'll dust them off for you when you get back there. Jamie, you've got on the Tourismore shirt. Is that... one of your favorite events?
Yeah, I think.
Absolutely.
I've done every one.
I missed one.
The first year was... I hate to use the word epic, but it was. So we got there and it was about, was like -2 or +2?
Yeah, plus.
And raining. +2 and raining. And then the winds were... It was the first one ever.
A driving wind.
A driving wind.
It was like...
There was times you were at 45 degrees. And it was hailing and snowing and the wind. It was unbelievable. Oh my God, didn't finish. I think a handful of guys finished the first year.
Yeah, riding the flat across the top once we climbed up and sinking into the mud about an inch on my old 86 Bertrand.
Because it was a vintage, right? The idea was to use vintage. So I was on a 10-speed, old Bellow Sport, 10-speed.
Almost could have walked faster.
Yeah.
Like, it was just...
Really?
And
it was
crashing. We came down into, I don't know if it was Glencairn or Glen Huron or where it was, but it's crazy downhill. And you can't actually feel if you're pulling the brakes or not because your hands are so cold and wet. So I peeled off there. Actually, with Brendan, I think. Brendan Matson.
I got in the van first time.
Yeah, you got back in the van. I just took a shortcut. They gave everyone their full entry fee back.
Really?
So at the beginning, they said, you don't have to pay. Here's your full entry fee back. And then we got back and they still... here's your six pack of beer. And it was like catered, right?
The whole thing was
was free.
Cool.
You know, they don't want anyone to feel badly about this.
And that's awesome because obviously you went back. You felt great about it. The event was awesome. So you go back.
It's a great event.
It was really well run. It was the worst weather, best run event we've been at.
It looked like, to be honest with you, it was one of those events that at the end it feels like you're at like a methadone clinic because everyone's walking around like shaking.
Yeah.
Not that I know what a methadone clinic feels like.
I don't know what we were eating and drinking after, and still guys are just trickling by the window. It's like, oh, I feel so bad for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's it, right? Who's tougher, the guy who finishes, like, puts a supreme effort out and finishes in an hour, or the guy who's out there for 3 hours? Who's tougher? Right?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
And what's your opinion on that?
Oh, my goodness. Those guys who are, like, still going and just keep going and going and going.
Not for me.
No, but it's impressive. It's impressive.
Eventually, you're not getting anywhere. Depends on what you want
to do. But that's resilience, right? I'm thinking back to Steaming Nostril and the poor little 10-year-old girl who was riding with her dad years ago.
She was crying on the side of the road and not going any further.
Yeah, that was another. Anyway, sad. I wonder if she ever did another event.
I was colder in that one. Steaming Nostril.
It was a sea of silver blankets.
I was in a rough shape for that.
That was 2 years ago.
Yeah. I get to the finish and I'm eating the chili. He's like, where'd Lucky get the blanket from?
So, Steaming Nostril is April? Or is that in March?
April. It's early April before Paris Ancaster.
Right. And Pete A, you guys are fairly regular with that?
Yeah. I love that. It's my one.
I've done it quite a few times now.
That's my one. That's a great event. But you know, we both, that's the one thing, because I'm a pretty cheap guy, but that's the one thing I pay like VIP for.
Right.
Because you get to start near the front.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a hard day for logistics just to get there. You're up at 5 to get there and it starts at 10. You got a bit of a second breakfast. And then by the time you finish and get back to your vehicle and get back to Barrie, it's a long day. And if the weather's bad, it can be.
The VIP is so worth it.
But the VIP is excellent.
Yeah,
they take your take your bike on a separate van, right? And you get the bus there and back, and you get the premium parking, and you get a great meal afterwards.
Cut so much off your
sandwich.
Day.
Yeah. And you get to start the front.
Yeah, which is, it's neighboring on 2,000 people. Is that right? Something like that.
Just about 15.
Four waves.
15 or 16.
Yeah, they get about 15, 16.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And fast.
Oh, yeah. That's
good. Right? We're never last.
Yeah. I've always said... no, that's true. I always said if I couldn't get into wave 2, I wouldn't even start.
Right.
Because it would just be... feel like you're in line.
I've gone in wave 2, but it gets deeper and deeper. Like, if you're 3 or 4, it must be hub deep by someone.
Yeah.
But you're just in it for that day, and you're going to do what you can. Most of the mud comes near the end. So then you just get through.
That's one of the few events, though, that I actually have a goal for, right? Like, I actually want to do well. I don't know. I guess it's early season and you feel pumped and stuff like that. Like, I always say I don't do races. I do events. You know what I mean? Because unless you're in the top 10, you're not really racing. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Are you? I
mean, you can be racing yourself. You can be racing your buddy,
yeah.
I guess. So that's with me with P2A. I'm not racing. I do have actually that incentive to, how did I do last year, right? Okay.
Is it an identical course every year?
No, it's really close, though. And the weather varies so much, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you can, but you kind of take it all into account and say, did I do better?
It's roughly the same. Sometimes it takes longer just because of the sections they add in. It's always roughly the same, time-wise.
Yeah.
I've done it 1 year. It was dusty. It was nice.
Really?
Yeah.
So no famous mud shoots?
It was still a little bit muddy.
Was it?
You know what? I believe they'll actually pull a pumper truck out there
really?
The night before and start hosing it down. That mud is always there.
Could be an urban myth. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure. I seem to recall in my peripheral vision seeing a pumper truck there one day.
But
if anyone from PETA is listening, we'd love to find that out for sure.
A little wetter is actually easier because if it gets to peanut butter, it's a bitch.
Yeah.
You get stuck. But a little wetter.
Smooth or crunchy?
Crunchy.
No.
You don't know where the rocks are. A little wetter, and you don't have to put your foot down. You just right through.
Yeah.
You get sticky. You get stopped.
It's this big. Have you ever done it?
No.
There's like this big trough, right? And it's a mud chute, but there's like people standing on the side. I don't know if it's like Flanders or whatever, but I swear there's kids with cinder blocks, like throwing them down in there just to see what they can. You know, oh, look at all that goopy mud. I'll throw some cinder blocks in there and we'll watch these guys come down. I'm sure I hit a cinder block one.
There's some boulders or something in there because your wheels are just sort of skipping off these rocks as you're going down. As long as you don't hit one straight on, which I haven't. But you just sort of, ricochet your way down through what you can't see.
So strategy, if you're in a group, get into that chute first?
You want to be at the front because you don't want someone to fall in front of you.
It's always the plan, but let's face it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to make your own mistakes. You don't
I've ridden
someone else's mistakes
several times. When you ride down there and you've never put your foot down, it's like, it doesn't even matter what happened the rest of the day. You're like, I rode all the chutes clean.
There's little victories.
And then when we say clean, you're not clean.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's little victories.
Yeah, that's bike racing for masters. There's all just the little moments in it.
That's awesome. I think, was it last year was sunny? I think I saw photos of that.
It brightened up just as, like, the day before, so.
It was windy, though.
Some of it had dried out, and the temperature was perfect. And it was all very rideable.
It was all rideable, and it was good. But I recall it being windy. Yeah. I didn't have a good
one. Spot
I lost
was
my
a
two
little
bottles right off the start. No. Oh, yeah.
You don't need to take any bottles.
What
they're everywhere. Yeah. Just get one as you need it.
Upgrade.
It must have been.
I had to go back and
it must have been 100
it's
bottles.
It was great at the beginning.
That was amazing.
Yeah. And I knew it was. I don't know what I was thinking.
Both.
Yeah.
They were just everywhere. It was amazing. I've never seen so many bottles.
And so some people love tech stuff. So what size tires are you running?
For
P-day.
Depends on the weather.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got a set of tires I run and have run just for that. That's all I use. They're
It's not like cross, let's face it, where you pull out your 10 tires and choose one for that day.
Right.
It's a loose lug. I don't know the make of it. And it's a 35, but it's a really loose lug, so it doesn't hold any mud. But it's a...
There's so much road on that course,
it's
though,
right? Pretty light because it's only a 35. It's basically a road with the little side knobs on it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good tire.
Yeah.
If you got a small block or something like that, it's just going to pack full and it's not going to do you any good. You need something a little looser.
Agree, Jamie?
That's my
opinion. I think there's so much road. Right, there's so much road on that
there
thing.
Is.
Yeah,
there's a lot of road, so you can stand to lose a little bit. That being said, I knew I had some good lugs on there last year, and I was like leaving people when it got to that stuff.
Right,
and then they were leaving me on the road. but it was kind of nice to hit that stuff and be confident you weren't sliding out the same way. But I don't know
if you're dragging 42s for 60 kilometers because there's 3 kilometers of mud.
Absolutely,
you could walk it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't
yeah.
matter.
Yeah. Have you guys ever walked that final hill?
Oh, absolutely.
Pieces of it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Piece, yeah. But
yeah, pieces of it.
Yeah. Every year I'm like, I'm not going to walk the hill this
it's
year.
It's very cramping.
And then sometimes you're just, that's it.
There's no choice.
No, there's no choice.
I think I passed 8.
And that's where all the crowd is too, right? So,
sure.
Yeah. Sometimes you plan, it's like, I'll walk a little bit early. And then when I get to the crowded part, I'll get back on my bike. Right?
Usually you don't have a choice. Like because it's early season and you're always overdressed, you're dehydrated and the cramps come.
You think we would learn after doing it that many times, but no.
I'm getting better, but no, not really.
The last couple of years I've been able to ride it, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I think I rode it last year. Avery passed me before the chutes, sort of, I can't describe the section, but within the last 10 kilometers, he passed me. And then there he is on the side of the road, rubbing his legs.
Last year?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Was it last year or year before? Anyways. It's like,
they didn't run it last year, so the year before.
Anyways.
Yeah. He was cramped.
he was cramped. I gave him a tip later in the summer on how to
get away with that. Look at him now.
and he tried. Well, I think I told him that day, and then he tried it later in the summer when he was having a problem, and he said it worked.
We have lots of free advice.
Lay it on me. What do you got?
Cramps?
Yeah.
Don't spin. Put in a big gear.
Yeah?
Iron it out.
Really?
Really. If you got that cramp because the muscle's firing, you want to slow that firing down and just grind it slowly. And it'll stretch it back out, and then you'll keep riding.
63-13.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, told Matt, and he tried it, and he says, yeah, that worked.
Nice. What's the other piece of advice you gave me a piece of advice, I think, at one of the Aussie Pursuit inner clubs.
Oh, that's odd. Mm-hmm.
It's something about give what you can, not all you can.
Did I say that?
Brilliant.
I don't think I said that.
Oh, maybe it wasn't you then. Maybe it was Cliff.
That sounds like a Cliff thing.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah. Cliff. That's right. A Cliff thing.
All right. Well, we'll catch up with Cliff.
But he's right.
Those interclubs used to be amazing.
Yeah.
That's where I started out.
When there was a volume of riders, like we'd have, 20 people in each group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was Owen Sound and Collingwood. Yeah. Barry. Was there one more? Newmarket. Yeah. They were great.
Yeah.
It was such a good way to start riding.
It's such a shame for how fun they are, how cheap they are, that
the
numbers just keep fading away.
People aren't as interested in or think they're interested in racing when they want to ride their bike. But this is really just a ride. And other people are trying to catch you, but you're just riding. It's not... It's racing, but it's not... Because it's handicapped, you're with your own group.
It's fun racing.
You're not like, well, I'm over my head, that's that. Shouldn't have come out. You're with your peers, and it's very inclusive that way.
I picked too fast of a group. My very first one that I did was out in Oro, I think, at the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
And I think I went up one too high, and I got burned, I think, like lap three. I was like, poof, pull the chute, I'm done. That's it. That's all I got.
But that's the great part. Another group's coming to catch you.
Yeah.
Except they're really fast.
It's defeating because they just like blow by you. But then,
when I was a kid doing it, I came to one, and it was Oro. And this Porsche pulls up, and it's Steve Podborski. I don't know if you know who Steve Podborski is.
I do.
He was a World Cup down champion. That was a hot day, too. And he just gets it. He's in my group. I don't know how that happened. But anyway, he gets to the front, and his legs are as big as my body.
Sure.
Right? Each leg. Right? And he gets it, and he's just hammering. I'm like, I'm not giving up on Steve Podborski. And like right there. And then he did two laps, and then he said, well, that's enough. And then he got in his Porsche and drove away, and we still had another lap to go.
It was like 90 degrees.
I was so disappointed by that guy. You bastard.
Yeah.
There goes my hero. He did drive away in a Porsche.
Again, hero. Did you guys have a favorite inner club race that you remember?
Like course or actual race?
Course or race?
I'm going the whistle.
Woo! Oh. I don't think I want to talk about that one.
That was, I think, my first interclub, which was Ravenna.
Yeah.
So nice and hilly. We had just met, so I had to be like 13 or 14 years old.
Something like that.
That'd be about right. And
I had my Fuji.
Yeah. He remembers the bike he had that day. Isn't that amazing?
That's awesome.
That was years ago. You tell a story. It's good.
I don't want to tell the story. I end up on the ground.
Well, I only know a vague recollection of it, so you can fill in the details. You know those little tubular whistles? I guess it's a whistle, but it more sounds like a siren. You put it in your mouth, it's like... Oren has this brilliant idea. So I'm going to bring this into a bike race. And at some point, I'm going to take this out. And I don't know what you were thinking.
Fun as hell. That didn't cause a crash. It was moments later.
I don't know. Maybe the story's changed over the years, but Oren pulls this whistle out and he's whistling. Next thing you know, there is a good crash.
Yeah, 60 kilometers an hour on hard lime and chip, what, tar and chip.
Yep.
Don't do that. That was my roughest crash ever.
Was it raining on that one, or am I thinking
of nope, one? It was nice and dry, no sliding. It was very grippy.
Because there was another Ravenna race, again, one of my first races.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't in that group. It was pouring rain.
But I know the story.
Right, and you have wool jerseys on. It's wool, right? Yeah. So I'm this 14-year-old skinny kid. I don't know. And the jersey that started out at your waist, as the race goes on, is getting longer and longer. It's down by your knees. It's like a dress, right? Part way through. But anyway, there was a crash behind me in my group. And all I remember is looking over, and there's this guy sliding on his ass on the road, but facing backwards. But he's passing us on the group. And you can see I'm looking down at him. He's looking up at me, knowing this isn't going to be good. And then there was some friction. The coefficient caught up to me. Boom, 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 boom. But to see this guy actually passing us, facing backwards on his butt, was... He was just sitting. I mean, like, I was waiting for holding a little drink in his hand or something. It's very bizarre. I still remember that.
Yeah.
I think that was the first crash I ever saw. I learned very quickly you're supposed to, when you hear like metal hitting the ground, you just take off. Just sprint away, unless it's in front of you, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't look back.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a crash, Jamie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not recently. This isn't wood, Mark.
No.
It's granite. It's okay.
Yeah. And what about mountain bike racing? Do you guys ever get... I know you
lots.
Both have mountain bikes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lots.
Yep.
I was terrible at those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. The more technical, the better, because it slowed.
You had that BMX background too, right?
Mm-hmm. And it slowed the field down so I could keep up. So if it was nice and turny, it was way easier.
There was early on out at Horseshoe, which I think was Horseshoe North, what it is now anyway. I guess it's, what is it now?
It's the Heights. Yeah.
So there was a race there. John Tomac was there. So we're talking the early days. Who else was there?
Yeah, and he was... In the middle of his career, so yeah. He was really flying. They brought him in as a guest, and that was...
So some of those trails have been actually resurrected this summer. They've recut some of those trails there with the Heights. So it's private, but if you're a member of some kind of mountain bike club, you can ride them.
I think it's fairly up and down.
I haven't ridden it yet, which is funny because it's like not far from my house at all.
My son rode with John Winfield on those just tonight.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Funny amateur.
But yeah, John Tomac was there. But we had races on that side too. Because the only reason I say that is because I remember that was my best race ever, which isn't saying much. But I got stung by a bee right on the starting line.
Oh, geez.
So I don't know, I guess the adrenaline or something.
I remember a guy peeing on the starting line. Just in the middle of the group, and there's this...
Oh, man. I liked the enduro events, though. Because there was like, they had enduro events, like, and they were like, how many hours would those things have taken?
Well,
they were like 80-kilometer mountain bike events. This was early on.
It's like the Paris Ancaster, but it was a mountain bike enduro event run by Wizard of Wheels.
Yeah, wow.
Wow. Wizard of Wheels.
Okay.
Mike Baddock.
Yeah.
And he ran them for years. We went to the first one, and it was fantastic.
They were great.
And we went to all the ones after that. And they were...
It took all day.
They were a real adventure. And some of the farthest biking that we had done, like, we're talking a 90-kilometer mountain bike race.
Nice.
And it would be extremely popular now because it would be like...
And you were covering some territory.
It'd be like the butter
tart. Like it wasn't a loop. It was
a bit of everything.
It was a loop. Sorry, it wasn't loops.
Right.
It was a single.
The first one, they bust us out.
Point to point, that one.
And then when we got there, they give us the map and we had to ride our way back.
Terrible map.
Oh, no, we had the map already. Only one guy had a laminated...
And people would change the signs.
Only one guy had a laminated map.
Wow.
And we got to about 10 kilometers from the finish, and someone had rolled over the log with the arrow. And eventually, we were, I guess, near the front. But eventually, we're in a group of 50 guys looking at soggy maps. And then someone pushes back the branches and is like, oh, it's right here. And it was like a foot away from where we were standing.
It was very Bugs Bunny.
And then race on. We're like 10 kilometers left and just full gas.
Crazy.
And it was a blast. It was a real adventure. And then they moved them to Hockley Valley, if you know that area. Mono Hills and all
yeah.
that. And they ran them there for years.
It sounds like Glenn Maywissa used to run stuff like that. The Hardwood Raid, I think was what it was called.
Yep, I did one of those. The first one, actually. I actually have a little plaque from there.
Yeah.
Thanks to my teammates, because it wasn't much for me that day. I think they were bunging me by the end. But yeah. And that was one... I remember carrying our bikes, like... waist deep water and stuff like that, the first raid.
the story I heard was that there was a river crossing, and if you didn't see this little wee sign on the other side, you would totally think this is the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Wrong way.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I still remember doing that. It was cold.
We did a mountain bike race. In the spring, there would be this one. We call it Fred's Farm. And Fred was one of the organizers. I don't know if it was his farm. I think it was around Uxbridge. And it had rained. It was always muddy. Hub deep, like 26ers, without a dye, up to the hub. And I made special tires for this ride. Like I took old Smokes and cut out every other lug just to have tires for this race. And it was fun. Anyways, about half an hour before the start, it had stopped raining. Great. The course is really muddy. As we're going through the race, every lap, the river crossing is getting deeper and deeper. The last lap, you're at a risk of losing your bike, and a couple people accidentally let go and did. They had to run down the bank trying to get their bikes back.
That's crazy.
Oh, it's fun.
That's awesome. Is that of track racing, what's your favorite? Like, is there a certain style of track? Because I understand there's lots of, there's like a Madison.
There's everything.
Oh my gosh, Madison.
There's a whole bunch of different stuff. So
if you,
is there one style you guys like?
If you watched the finish of Tour of Flanders, they called that a match sprint. And the style in which the two vans were racing each other was literally track racing.
Oh, where Vanderpool's just looking behind him. He's not even looking forward.
And they're going really slow.
Right.
That's like a match sprint.
That's an Orn event. That is not a me event.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's funny how you see that. And they actually did a lot of riding in the track in their youth. So you see that, how it plays out in the real world. Favorite event? I like them all. I'm not as good at some of them than I am at others.
I like the Devil Take the Hindmost. Scratch.
Elimination,
yeah.
So what's that?
I think I would have figured out the names. So, the group's going around, obviously, and then every once in a while you get a bell, and depends on how long the distance of the race it is, and the person who comes over the finish line last is out. So it's elimination, literally.
Oh, okay.
Every other lap.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah.
So you just got to sprint.
There's a few
last.
Things you can do.
You can't take off.
I learned that.
It's every other lap's going to eliminate. So if you get gassed, you have to stay at the front. If you overpace it on that lap and now you're getting overtaken, you're at risk of being at the back.
And it's amazing how fast things turn around. You're like, I'm at the front, I'm at the back. Right?
Huh.
Or if you're boxed in, it just gets, it's very interesting. I love it.
There's always a one lap neutral, but on the elimination race, it's just the phrase one lap neutral. It is full out and it is fast.
So tell me this then, just thought of this, but so I've been down to get the two certifications you need to ride and whatnot.
What'd you think?
I thought it was great. Especially when you're sort of out there on your own, I could really get behind that. Like, you can just focus on what you're doing and not. There was one guy in our group who was really sketchy, and
that happens all the time.
I'd be nervous.
They're there on the road too. You just don't notice it.
Yeah. And I don't know what those bikes come with, but I felt like, and I guess my question to you guys is, cadence wise, I know you can't put sensors on the bike, but I know I sort of capped out level wise of what I felt comfortable with without getting bouncy on the bike.
You're on a rental on the Argonauts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful bikes.
There
bike.
Are 16, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
They had some
that
they put 15s on, but then they reverted back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, I forget what inches that is, but that's a pretty light gear. But you can go fast on that gear.
But, so I would say, I would guess my cadence was well over 100. But, do you guys spin fast like that? Like, well over 100, do you think?
And I don't know if it's Orin's BMX. He can spin much better than I can. He can be smooth at 120, and at 120, I'm not smooth anymore. Right? And you can get your cadence up higher than that.
Yeah. So I've been asked this before, and I think sort of the starting point at the Velodrome is around the 90 mark, where people are normally riding, but it goes up from there. And when you only have one gear and the group's taking off from you, there's only one way to go.
Right.
So if you're already riding at what you're normally comfortable at, it's going to stretch you out to what you're not comfortable. Eventually.
But I think there's an age thing in there too. Like, I've been spinning like 90 something, probably most of my life. But if you get the juniors out there and they're on restricted gears,
they are
it is unbelievable. So supple. The cadence that they can get up to and just leave everyone behind. And it's amazing. So they have a smaller gear than everyone else, okay. And they can leave them. Right?
Like a sewing gears. Machine. But they're so supple, and their legs are half the size, so they don't have the mass.
Right.
But they are fast.
It's an impressive skill. Yeah. That they've learned, right? To do that.
It's a skill. You can learn it.
And when your gear's too big, you can't respond, right? Like, someone leaves, and you're like, four strokes to get going, and they're gone. Yeah. Right? So there's a balance there. You have to
Motor pacing at the end of last year, and all the guys were on a lighter gear than me, a 94. And I hadn't been trying my spinning all winter. I'd been working on just sort of grinding it away, getting ready for Paris Ancaster. And I just, this was a bit of an experiment that I thought, I'm not going to spin. I'm going to work on sort of leg endurance. And I'll ride
the
track.
Were you doing that so you're hoping not to cramp later on? Was that the idea?
No. It was just cruising.
Sat at home hitting myself in the head with a hammer.
Just cruising on the blue. I was spinning, but I wasn't spinning fast. Anyway, so I was on 100, and they were on a 94, and I had trouble keeping up because they've been doing that all. I only dropped into one motor pacing, and they've been doing it all season, and they were just more supple than me. They could do it.
When you say 100 or 94, what's that in reference to?
Oh, it's inch gears.
Gear inches.
So they're on a 100 is 52.14, and 94 would be 49.14.
Okay, and you both have track bikes?
Yes.
And what do you have multiple gears you can
absolutely
pick?
Yeah. For depending on what you're doing, and even certain events, when we did some of the club races, and they'd have a gear restriction that we'd be only, so a max gear you could put on, so it was a little more even for everybody.
In the geriatric category, they have a gear.
You race with the women and children.
And you race with the women. They're so much more intelligent than the men.
They are the best.
You can trust them. They don't do stupid stuff.
That's awesome.
It's true.
It's good to know.
It's the preferred person to be behind.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Every time.
So what about cross racing? You guys seem like you've done everything.
I did Nationals one year. I got 13th at Nationals.
Get out of here.
Nope. Threw that, and that was in
crushed it.
80s. And I said, enough of that. I'm not doing cross ever again. True story.
That's awesome.
I love
hated it.
The first lap is the best. And the rest is not. Elbow to elbow and going through the first few turns and just pounding away. And then they all pass me. That's it.
You know what? That's one of those things. It's like, and it's the same as some of the other events. It's like, an hour is not my time.
Okay.
Just, I trained for it maybe, but it just was not. Those hour-long events are not my, I don't enjoy them either, so.
The track events are very short.
The best thing about track, you screw up, you're going to be on there again in 20 minutes.
You get another chance right away.
Okay. A road race, you screw up. You're going to be on there again next week. Right? You're going to ride it out all day and you get a chance next week. But track, 20 more minutes.
Yeah.
We would do in the club events that they do like Saturday nights. So you'd have a points race. No, I guess we start with a scratch, which is a race, just first one to the end of the line. Points race.
Oh, there's elimination. So many. That's why I love it too. There's so many.
And another one, maybe a chariot race. Chariot race being like a lap and a half.
Okay.
So it's just
full sprint.
Sprint. But there's some time to have some tactics in a lap and a half.
Sure. Yeah.
But
so much time to screw up. Yeah. Loads of time to screw up. So
all these races would be 10 to 20 minutes in length. Not long.
What's a lap take to do?
For me or for some of these fads?
somewhere between, for us, in a race, 15 to 18 seconds.
Can't be 15.
15 to 20? Why not?
I don't think so. Because I think Lionel Sanders was doing 17s. Is that right? Don't fact check me on that.
Well, no, I'd like, so 15 if we were going all out.
Yeah, yeah.
But if we're cruising in
right.
mid-pack...
Because you'd be over... Yeah, you'd be well into the 50s.
Easily.
Oh, yeah.
But if we're cruising mid-pack, we'd be in the mid-40s.
What do you think your top speed is on the track? I guess you can't take your computer, can you?
You can put it on. You just can't look at it while you're riding.
Okay.
So you can have it on your seat. And
you
look
do,
at it
though.
After.
You have yours. I never take mine, I know.
Not all the time. But sometimes just to sort of calibrate... what you think you're at, so you
right.
just have an understanding, as you're sort of alluding to.
Yeah.
Orange and number. I'm more of an aesthetics guy. Okay. By feel.
Some guys will put them on, and then you can read theirs while you're riding.
But yeah, that's true. They haven't actually mounted behind their seat. So if I'm behind the guy, his computer's there, and I'm, like, reading what we're doing.
They only have, like, two things. They just have the time and the speed, so it's huge.
Okay.
But I honestly think they shouldn't do that.
Yeah, I don't even know why they do that, but I'm happy they do it. But
yeah, it gives
I should
you
probably pay more attention.
Gives you an indication of where you're at.
But what's Richard doing? Like those guys, I think he must be getting 70 sometimes.
Oh, so the match sprinter guys, they're tickling on 70. They're high 60s and
wow.
70s.
Pretty
wow.
impressive.
Very
that's
very
impressive.
Very specialized.
Yeah.
That's not every rider. But if we started in motor pacing or not motor pacing,
Kieran.
We started with Kieran. Just 6 laps. The first 3 laps, the motorbike takes you from 30 to 50 and then peels off, and then you're left with 6 people to finish the other 3 laps and sprint it out. So you basically get paced up to 50 kilometers an hour and then take off from there.
That's a hugely specialized event, those guys.
Yeah. But we do it too.
I never enter that one.
No.
So there's the starting pace is 50.
Wow. Crazy.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be on a rental for that?
No.
When
you spit out like 150.
You would be.
When the Olympic level guys like Hugo and them that we've seen at the UCI event that they run, when they jump up to 70, it is shocking.
I think I maybe was sitting with you guys be 2-3 years ago for that. Was it 2 years ago? They had
it could
that?
Have been, yeah.
Yeah. That guy has legs. Holy smokes.
It's amazing to watch track racing, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's such good value. I just love
it. It is the best to watch.
Yeah. You see the whole track. Like, it's not like... you know, hockey or whatever, where you're up in the nosebleeds and you can kind of see part of the rink or whatever. You were sitting right there and you see the whole track.
Yeah. You don't need that little blue trailer on the bike from Fox.
The
little name tag going around.
Yeah.
What we're missing this year also with COVID is the 6-day races, which I would watch on YouTube or whatever. And they were a lot of fun to watch. And it's like... how'd you describe it? Track, but at a circus. So they do all kinds of crazy events, and there'd be pros there like Mark Cavendish and doesn't matter.
The Italian guy. You know, the one Italian guy? Joggles
Paisano. Chop that out.
Yeah, no, it's good.
He's in the jury right now. That's why I'm trying to remember his name.
It's better to leave it in because someone will be listening and they'll be yelling the name to themselves in their
head. Joggles Paisano! Joggles Paisano!
Starts with a V. No, you're wrong. It's a Paisano. Viviani. Hey!
There you go.
And so there he is, racing the World Tour. So they take the winters, and along with some Olympic athletes and that, and team up and do these 6-day races. If you haven't seen them, check them out. They're pretty cool. And they'll do all these events, men and women, and some of them are bizarre and some of them are scary. So be like motor paced Madisons, motor paced flying 200s with a Madison partner.
Do you know what Madison is?
Is that the one where you put your hand out and the other person pushes you?
And you slingshot.
They grab person. Onto you. Oh, okay. They don't push you, they grab you. And it's a slingshot motion that you get thrown.
He loves it.
I did see that then when I was down there.
He got me. I didn't even think you'd ever get me into that. So we did a couple courses.
Yeah.
Right?
And lots of arm twisting to get your arm out.
Oh, man, he did. He had to really push me. I'm like, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to go and do Madison. Okay, I'll do it. But, and I said I'd go, but I said I'm not racing it.
No, we don't.
Just the whole.
We shouldn't race it.
It's, yeah. But what an amazing thing to watch.
It's the hardest. But it's the funnest. But it's the hardest. Because it's...
it's like a bike race in a beehive.
Oh, yeah.
The trouble is there's other people. If it was just you.
I find that with all my races. Wow, it would have been so good if only there weren't other people.
Because you're switching every lap and a half.
Yeah.
Two laps.
That's what, four teams or...
Oh man,
more? It can be any I forget which
12?
Milton certified for like 16 or 20 teams.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And if you're
weaving in and out and up track and down track and slingshotting and slowing down in front of you, right?
It's a points race. So there's points every 10 laps. So there's a sprint every 10 laps. So you're timing that sprint to get thrown in on that lap.
You're a faster person, too.
So you're planning that out, all your exchanges, every lap and a half, two laps, so that you, when you hit that 10 laps, you're throwing in for the sprint. But because people are doing that, you also get points if you lap the field.
Okay.
You lose points if you get lapped.
Oh, geez.
So the pace is on the whole time. It's blasting.
But even if someone drops down in front of you, right, and they're about to slingshot, you know that one person is about to basically apply the brakes, right? And you're all on fixed gears, so it's a lot of thinking.
It's a quick slowdown. It's usually, if there's a problem, it's because someone's exchanging and they're coming backwards because they're throwing someone forwards,
right?
And then
you gotcha.
Get the wheels coming again.
Do you guys find it hard on your knees slowing down on track?
Not at all.
No, I didn't learn the proper way of slowing down because I found that harder.
I know exactly what you're saying, and I totally get that. And I have been in situations where that's the case, and it's just, you know what it is? It's just lack of anticipation. And eventually that doesn't happen because you're not applying the brakes that way because that's an emergency
kind of thing, right? Shouldn't be looking at wheels. You should be looking ahead.
But yeah. I got you there.
Yeah, yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
The crazy
about.
Guy. Just whoop.
And once you know those people, you are always looking at them.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's because of coming off the road, you're always thinking about applying the brakes. And I think when you get on the track, you're not thinking about applying the brakes. You're going, where's my escape route?
It's
right. Where do I go? Not do I slow down? Because that's not an option, right?
Yeah.
Just a different way of looking at it.
What's Dave Jack say? Just go up tracks. It's self-cleaning.
It's a self-cleaning track. Yeah, it's my favorite line. That is so true.
Self-cleaning.
I've seen that a few times.
Someone falls, they're disappearing.
Yes.
You've fallen on the track.
Ouchie.
I have not yet.
Don't recommend.
You notice I say yet.
I imagine that's, I think I saw a crash when I was there, and I think it's kit ending.
The new kits that they have now are just like gauze material. So yeah.
Yeah.
It's a burn, so there's not a lot of blood or anything. So it's a burn, so the kids don't... It's just such a high abrasion.
Yeah.
They don't like it.
It's funny, though, when people find out, like, you ride the track, they always want to send you these videos. Hey, look at this guy crashing on the track. Look at this 2x4 through his leg, right? It's like, oh, thanks. For this. I'm not going to look at that.
Someone sent me that.
Yeah. Wow, check this out. Oh, I'm good, thanks. Yeah.
Have you ever guys ever gone down to the one in London, the Forest City?
Yeah, so before
once.
Milton...
Yeah, before
and it was January, I think, when we were down there. It was freezing.
First,
it was an old hockey arena, and there was no heat.
First year BCC.
Or a toque.
Yeah.
First year BCC, they arranged a trip, and a bunch of us went. And,
yeah.
Got certified, rode the track, and then stayed for the Open.
But they're so different. I wouldn't even...
I've seen pictures of them.
You go in circles. That's the only thing that's kind of the same. But honestly, the bank is so steep, and the track's so short.
It's narrower.
When the guys ride beside you, his pedal's going by your face, yeah. right? Like you look over and like, oh, that's a foot and a pedal by my head.
Yeah.
I those guys.
I know.
Riding it is one thing. Racing it would be something completely different.
Milton's 13 on the straights and 46 in the curve. And Forrest, I think, is like 50-something.
I don't know.
It's so much.
It looks at it.
It's narrower, too. So you don't have as much real estate to go up and around.
Yeah.
I know some guys that ride there like the Boston Bruins regularly.
They're open now. They're open for drop-ins.
Yeah.
They just pulled back to 10 riders. Nine plus a facilitator.
Okay.
And it's just like if you're going anywhere, you make an appointment. So you basically book your spot.
Yeah.
But that's another one of those things, right? Where you're going, how are they financing that? Like, how can they possibly?
They're having a lot of troubles.
Right? It's hard and for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forest City's had a lot of troubles and is currently.
I think Ed Beal's done a couple fundraisers for...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of high-caliber riders have come through that track before.
Absolutely.
Sure. Definitely before Milton. A lot.
And, you know, as awesome as Milton is, I'm sure that actually hurt London because if you were driving from here to go to London and you have an option of Milton... You're not going to drive further.
Yeah,
for the most part.
I would argue that you wouldn't drive further.
Some people would have a double membership,
like they do regularly.
Just because if they happen to live in that area, then they get more track time. So if you're coming from London, you would train at Forest City and then go to Milton to exercise.
Yeah, and in that way, that's what I was thinking. I think it works really well.
Yeah,
I think it's like,
but people from
a good relationship that way.
Yeah, people from Ottawa aren't trucking all the way to London anymore.
Yeah.
Well, not that.
So I think they get a good grassroots thing going at London, and those kids may or may not move on to do stuff at Milton, right?
Their grassroots kids program is huge.
They have a great program in Forest City.
Awesome. And you guys mentioned BCC. How long have you... So you're original members?
You mean Huronia Cycling Club?
The Huronia Cycling Club.
1980, whatever.
Well...
1970-something.
I wasn't sure on the date, so I called Morgan and asked him, and he said it was founded, the Huronia Cycling Club founded in 1974. Now, he joined in 1977.
I think I joined in 1981.
And they started the Inner Club series about then with Gord Clark, Michelle Legoy from Collingwood, Gord Clark from Newmarket.
And Emil, maybe. Or somebody.
Maybe Emil. There was a lawyer, Dan something, forget his name. And but the guy that started Barry Cycling, or Huronia Cycling Club at the time, was Jerry Breeding.
Oh.
So
yeah.
You ringing a bell?
Yep, absolutely.
And and it all...
What year were you born?
75.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
19.
Yeah.
So at the time, road racing was a culture, and through the 70s, there was a real boom in road cycling and touring, and I think that's how Morgan got into it. We were oblivious to that. We were just kids. We didn't know there's...
But I remember showing up to Interclubs. So Michel Leguay was Collingwood Cycling Club, mm-hmm. and he's from Brittany in France, but he's like a heavy French accent.
Right.
And there'd be like Dutch guys, and it was just like,
oh,
it was crazy. It was like different than any other sport around here. You know, you'd show up to a race and there's guys from different countries there, and it's like, it was a totally different feel than so many of the things. Like, you didn't get that in hockey, you don't get that in basketball and stuff like that, or soccer. It was just like, well, you're probably getting soccer.
It was
totally different scene. It was very cool.
Cool.
And they all had stories.
Yeah.
Right. And they were all experts on, you know, certain cycling things. It was just like this wisdom being passed down to you from this guy from France, right? Or a guy from Holland. And you're like, this is amazing. And a lot of British guys, too.
You would see different bikes that you'd never seen. And it was because there was no social media. We didn't like Google anything.
It felt like an international event, like a local international event.
We went and we're like, wow, there's other people.
What a great time to bring on a whistle.
I remember Epping used to be the Inner Club Series Epping, was now a 2 or 3 lap race. It, when I started back then, it was a 1 lap.
Okay.
We actually rode onto Highway 26.
I didn't know. It was falling. But it was quite erecting. 80K, and I had no idea where I was. Just stay with the group. But we raced differently back then. There was a lot more chatting.
Yeah.
We weren't necessarily in the drops the whole time. It was, we were in this social group going along. Very less racy compared to now.
It got racy, but it didn't stay. Like, by the end, it was getting racy, but people didn't hammer out at the start or anything like that.
No, they weren't looking at their watch and knowing the lap times or anything like that. We're like, okay, well, I'm riding. I assume
this is. We know the gap between the guys in front of us and the guys behind us is what we have to do.
And the gaps always worked out just right.
Probably time I should throw away this cigarette and this baguette now. Get serious.
I remember having a conversation about the apple I was eating with Sue Palmer.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I can never eat an apple.
Who was on the national, went on to do the national cross country student?
Yeah, she's from Collingwood.
Okay.
And let's pull out an apple and eat an apple. She says, how can you eat an apple when you're on riding on a bike? I was like, oh. Didn't have any bananas.
Yeah. That's awesome. And so how many people was the Huronia Cycling Club back then? Do you remember? Big club or?
I don't know the numbers.
Probably pretty small, I would imagine.
I would think if we got like 15 to 20 people out on a time trial, a Tuesday night time trial, that was a pretty decent number.
Yeah, we started the time trials at Johnson's Beach parking lot.
Okay.
And went at Ridge Road.
To Shandy Bay, basically, and turned around and come back.
Just a quick aside, do you know how long Keith Richards has been a BCC member?
Well, BCC started 2006, so not before then.
Okay. I'm going to talk to him and Joe Fortnum about time trialing.
Oh, yeah.
This week.
Oh,
yeah.
I think Joe's been working on his time trial.
And that's Keith's thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
He loves it. I wish I was good at it.
Joe has been working because he borrowed my brother's aero helmet this summer. Yeah.
Oh,
so he's obviously had some kind of goal.
I think he's got Mike Drinkwater's bike.
He hadn't purchased it last time I heard, but he.
No, I know it was all alone.
Yeah.
He was being heavily encouraged to take it. And.
Man, let's face it, give that guy an aero helmet and a time trial bike and see you later.
Yeah.
You can see some Stravas going down.
Joe seems, I don't know him super well, but he seems like he is a student of the game.
He's very, a good student of the game.
He's very much involved in, I want to get better.
Joe is special.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way.
And he didn't even make air quotes for those people at home. There was no special.
Yeah.
He meant special. Real special.
I don't say that lightly, and I haven't said that about really anybody. No one has put in the amount of miles that he has from a zero stop to where he is now. No one has said, oh, I should just bust out 10,000 kilometers this year.
That's right.
No one does that.
Yeah.
But loving it the whole time.
Yeah. No one starts from zero and goes to that.
Yeah. I wanted to push on a downhill segment because I'm a heavier guy and I just wanted to see, just scouting, I wanted to see Joe and Eric they're tied with KOM, and I thought, I just want to see, where am I at with this?
Eric BW?
Yeah.
I think I know the one.
It's on the 12th line,
going
south on Ridge. Like, I couldn't hold the wattage. I thought, if I'm in the ballpark of wattage, if I'm 100 less, I'm happy with that, just to try this out, see where I'm at. There's no way. There's no way I could hold. I couldn't come anywhere.
Those guys are big diesel engines, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I would actually put Joe in another category from that. And I've been saying that since the beginning when you watch this guy. Because I remember we went out for a 250-kilometer ride one time. And Joe had, maybe it was his first year. Yeah. And I thought, okay. And he's a pretty big guy at that time, right? Look at him now. And I'm like, wow, I know this guy's doing great. He's putting some long rides in. I said, well, I'll get to a hill and it'll be all over. No way. He's like, this guy should not be going up this hill. He's too big. And there he goes, and there he's leaving. Yeah, it's unbelievable. But he did the Grand Fondo a couple of years ago. In fact, it was the championship Grand Fondo when it was over Meaford Collingwood Way.
Yeah.
And I said, Joe, how did it go? Not so good.
With ones and twos, he's riding with some fast.
Not so good. I got dropped fairly close to the start, and it took me a long time to catch back up. And I'm like, what? And then he goes, and then I got dropped again. And then it took me almost half an hour to catch back up. And then happened three times. I'm like, then I stopped for pee and... people don't catch back up, man. Like, no, oh, not so good, thing. He says.
That's not a thing.
Took me, I had to catch up four times, those guys. Yeah. Hammering at the front. yeah, Joe.
It's one of those things.
Something you should know.
You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
I suggested he go in the Paris Ancaster and say they have a Clydesdale category.
Oh, he'd clean up.
And he did.
Oh,
he was a shoo-in.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, the jersey. Yeah. I remember him. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I said, you got to be... He looked at it, and he could see the times he had to be. And because he is, as you say, a studier. And he does catch on to the technique and what's involved. And he did it.
Yeah.
And that is a new event for him, and that is a specialized event. But he just did it on sheer.
Yeah, like he doesn't necessarily have the skill to say, okay, well, when I get to this section and to this section, he's just pounding it. And
he's gifted.
Special.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it happens. It's cool.
Oh, it's so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
Oh, so much fun to watch.
Yeah. It's a blast. I'm cheering him on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's inspiring. I think for anyone who knows anything about Joe, you know, he was an overweight dude and found biking, and he's
there was
really...
a guy at the track when we're in between efforts sit on the chairs, not always out there pounding it,
right?
So because if you want a drink of water, you got to come off the track,
right?
So I was talking to this guy. He's like, oh yeah, so I started here, and this was a non-cyclist. He took a tour of the track because he lived in Milton. And says, oh, I'm gonna do this. And he lost 100 pounds and goes rides there like 3-4 times a week.
Crazy.
A non-cyclist.
That's awesome.
Joins the Velodrome. He was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome when you hear stories like that. It's super inspiring. Yeah. So, sorry, back to the Huronia Cycling Club time trial. Johnson's Beach out to which line?
Somewhere around the third.
Around the third, and then it... So, coming in, sprinting over the hill, what we call the finish, and then sprinting down through the stop sign because there was no traffic back then.
Right.
So we just kind of flying down there. So it felt good for a finish.
You would, yeah. And in fact, cars would be. You might see one or two cars on your whole run.
In our cycling career, we've seen Ridge Road get paved twice now.
Really.
Wild. And
from
then,
the old Roman cobbles.
That's right. And then it got a little busy. Morgan says, oh, it's getting kind of busy in town. It's coming through this stop sign. So we moved out to just before the bridge on the Barrie side.
Okay.
Oh, and it used to be a marina there.
A marina there. So it's basically a parking lot. And we would race from there. And that was a little easier finish. And we'd go out to just before the telephone pole, just before the fourth.
Okay.
And there wasn't a stop sign in Richard at Shanty Bay. So we could, there was no stop sign, so we could go right through.
And I think that's maybe morphed now to a Strava segment, 272. I think that's almost 15. I think it's 15K.
Oh.
Or it's pretty close to that.
Yeah. I should make one for that's the old...
you should.
Yeah.
Bridge to the fourth. That would be a good segment.
I... put a small disclaimer on Strava segments that go through stop signs. Because that's hard.
That's...
It's hard. Because you...
I don't bother.
Yeah. I mean, you want to do the right thing and stop. So...
I am not a Strava guy, so I love to watch other people pound it out on there.
You just...
I've seen people just get so obsessed with these things.
You just recently turned yours on.
I did turn my Strava back on after years. I turned off Facebook and turned on Strava.
I said this on the last podcast to Jess. She's new to cycling. And
Jesslyn.
Yes, Jesslyn, yeah. And so she said, I've really come to realize that I'm spending most of my social media time on Strava. And I said, and I encourage that. If that's the worst social media thing you do is Strava, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Because you think what's attached to that, right?
Yeah. For sure. I'm actually... right behind you on a Strava segment that I really want.
Come get pointing it. At orange.
No, you're two. Ed Veal's number one.
Where?
It's only a matter of time.
I have a number of second places.
Yeah. it's between Duckworth. It's on Grove between Duckworth and St. Vincent.
Oh,
downhill.
Yeah.
In town. Travis. That's another thing I find another very thing bizarre. Is,
yeah, I'm not a fan of
I that, only but. Made an effort for that once just to see because it's on my way to Sunnydale Park.
Right.
So I only made an effort on that once. And
pretty but sure it's I've gone his wheel at that time.
Really what's tough to get stopped or a hard right at the gas station.
And I think for me anyways, I found with my time, whoever made that a segment picked the stop point almost right in the intersection.
And yeah.
If you have to slow for red light or whatever, it's
if there's a car there and you can't shoot a hard right, you can't fly out into the lane.
Right.
You've got to just...
That just sounds mean.
You got to get down to 15 and just squeak around.
Who is that guy, right? Like, who does that?
Yeah, it's...
I don't know who made
and yet here we are going for it.
I don't like that. That's really sloppy. I shouldn't even bother.
Yeah. I've said this before.
You could get that.
I would love for Strava to be a little more integrated with stoplights and stop signs so that it would say 20 feet before is where it stops versus someone... picking like the middle of an intersection that's got to stop.
They have Strava with cross-country skiing segments too because I ride out, ski out of Horseshoe and I remember coming home one night and somebody's just sent me this nasty message like ripping me a new one for doing something over their Strava segment. I'm like, I don't know, man. I just turned it on. I don't even know how to set a segment, but it was like nasty. People get really adamant about, I don't know, possessive maybe of their Strava segments. I just had to say it wasn't me, but
there's a few people I've talked to. Trevor O'Donnell, someone claimed, so you can flag someone if they get a KOM.
I've done that.
Yeah, and it's usually people in cars. Always. Innocent for 99% of the time. You forget to
turn your computer off or something like that. Yeah, yeah.
Anyways,
it's not me, I swear.
There's one that I was trying to just use Trevor as a benchmark. Not that I'll ever be on his level, but. And someone flagged him, so they took it away from him. And I said, so I texted him. I said, Trev, you gotta take this back. All you have to do is just say, no, I really did this,
because
it was like 50, I don't know, 50.
So they automatically take it away.
So if someone flags it, Strava will usually just take you off the leaderboard
without looking at it,
which is too bad because he had power and everything. Like there wasn't really any debating.
It's an automatic.
And does he even care? Did he just say whatever?
He doesn't, which is too bad, because now the real time of that, the real KOM, that was gone.
Yeah.
He had like 18 seconds or whatever.
And he was like, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got probably 20 pages of them, so.
I only got a couple. And I only defend one.
Oh, do tell. Which one is it?
It's his driveway.
No, if you make one there, I might get another second. The finish.
The finish.
Because inevitably someone's parks their car somewhere and then hops in and drives through that. And that's
which finish?
The finish.
At by the church?
Of the hill.
Old finish. Yeah. The original.
And so that's the only one I flag cars that go through that.
Sure.
That's it.
Oh, I thought you meant like you were defending it, like when people go to try and snipe it.
Well, I'm a third way tie on that one.
Okay.
I don't.
He would.
Would you care to mention who the other guys are or girls?
Fertini, Davide, and
you've heard of him.
Mike Gardner.
Okay.
Pros.
Fair enough. You're in that level, man. That's awesome.
I was. For like 27 seconds, I was.
That's all you need. Lives on. Where
can sprint? He can still do it.
Yeah.
Not as much.
And you know what? That's why we've got along so well, I think, for so long. Not why we've got along so well, but even in a race, we are never fighting for the same spot. Okay. I just wonder, you know, because he can sprint. I can't sprint with the life of me, but I can go up a hill.
Okay.
Right?
I can't go up a hill.
So you can go up a hill a lot better than you used to be able to go up a hill.
You can sprint better than you used to.
Yeah, that's true, but it's still not the same. It's diminishing returns here.
You actually.
So oddly enough, we'd be in a race, right? And we would see how it would play out, and it'd be like, okay, if it's a hill, I'll go. But if that doesn't work, then he's going to sprint. It always worked out that way.
One of my favorite races was Interclub, and you asked me to go to the front because you could see the group coming behind. He said, can you go to the front and pick it up so we can get to the finish?
Mm.
And that was fantastic. I burnt myself out and it was great. It worked.
And yeah. I lost it. No,
you won it. Actually, I pulled away too hard, and I had to.
Yeah, that does happen.
I had to come back, re-hitch them on, and then take them again.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah.
And then limped home.
We all limped home, I'm sure.
So what happened with the Huronian Cycling Club?
It just sort of disappeared because of mountain biking.
Okay.
When we switched to mountain biking, we still had Huronia and we still raced inner clubs and things with that, but it just slowly faded over the years. Mountain biking.
There was, right, that's true. In the 80s, mountain biking came up and it was like you were spending weekends doing that as opposed to riding road stuff.
Yeah, and everyone was.
Yeah, that's true.
And that went on for more than a decade.
Yeah.
So it just fizzled.
Yeah.
Then we started riding again road. And that got very busy. We started riding with Dave Graham and a bunch of people at Sunnydale. We'd have Tuesday rides. And we'd meet up with 30 or 40 people, and we had one group. And that was fun.
But the roads were different, right?
The roads were different.
Sure. You weren't interfering with traffic, and you could just do it.
Yeah. We would go south a lot more.
That's when Barrie was like probably 40,000 people, too.
Sure. And cycling, Jimmy, you have kids?
I do, too. Okay.
So, Oren, I know it's changed, obviously, for you, because you have a junior as well. Do the juniors of your family ride bikes?
Yep.
I have one who likes to ride bikes and one who does everything she can not to get on a bike. She has a really nice bike, but man.
Yeah.
So yeah, they just have different interests. My kids get in the car and they turn on the Broadway channel. So I have musical theater kids, which is awesome.
Okay.
Which is awesome. I just love it. We just have different interests and it's so okay.
And that's it. It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My oldest got a job and made some money and bought himself a nice stump jumper.
Nice.
And then he went out and bought some knee and elbow pads because he wrecked himself. And and he's been loving it. And what I'm really happy with is that he's sort of found it himself.
That's cool.
And that's been great.
Yeah, that's totally true, isn't it? He's just found it himself and seen and said, I don't think I want to try that. It wasn't any push.
I would say I introduced him to it, but then he found it himself and he's loving it. He was working at Carriage Hills as a lifeguard, and then he would go ride the downhill and take the lift up
and
do that after work. Because he'd get off at 3 and do that regularly.
They both like it, though.
Yeah, and Jonas liked it. He had a lot of fun with Andrew's program that he's running for the juniors on Monday nights. We were regular with that, and that was a great environment for him. And he goes out and rides with his buddies and all kinds of things.
I think that was kind of, the brief exposure I got to that was that they kind of became buddies, even though all the kids didn't know each other ahead of time.
That's biking.
A few weeks in, you're...
Yeah, and you know, that's funny, because my friends that I've kept, they're all cycling.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
The ones that I still knew in high school and I'm still talking to, it's cycling related.
Yeah.
Same.
And cycling's that funny thing where it just brings together people from all walks of life and all. I don't know what it is. I don't think that's true with the other sports the same way. Maybe I'm naive on that, but you're getting billionaires riding with bricklayers, and it's just this community.
If you're doing, as a master, pickup hockey, you don't bump into people when you're accidentally out playing hockey. But you do that when you're out biking.
Point.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. It's
your focused. Circle is your circle, but in cycling, your circle is ever expanding.
Yeah.
Hmm. It's interesting in hockey. You can sort of, that was the sport I guess I came from. You have a group that you're tight with, and then someone will say, "Well, do you want to come play with these guys?" So then you maybe lose those guys, but you pick up new guys, and it's just an ever morphing group. And I can think of only one person that I've kept in touch with from early 2000s that I played hockey with.
That's interesting.
And that's fleeting at best, but one person.
That's good, because we're only just seeing that from the outside.
Sure.
From the cycling side.
Because
I came from a high-lie background. You know, not common in Canada. No, I'm just
kidding. I said I started to ride with guys in Waterloo, and I got to know Alan and Malcolm and Dell quite well, and they said, "Oh, you're one of us. Come on out and go to their place after for beers and things like that." And it's
and then we're riding with them on the track.
Yeah.
And then they come up here this spring. We ride over, you know, to Quail's Brewery and stuff like that. Cool. Socially distanced, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
But you don't do that.
When you meet cyclists, you already sort of have an understanding of how they do things.
Yeah.
And what they're doing.
Yeah.
But yet they're all very different people at the same time.
Oh, very different.
Mm-hmm.
Very different.
Yes. And they're, like every walk of life, there's different personalities within that.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
There is a, you know, longevity to this sport. It's because it's an endurance sport.
Yeah. You guys ever had any nagging injuries that have sort of plagued you with your cycling?
I've got a leg thing going on. my just right when COVID was happening in the spring, I was going to work, getting a sore back at work, and then going to the track that same day, not helping it, and then getting home at midnight, sliding into bed, and doing that for a few weeks, my back just shut down, and my leg nerves got pinched. It was like a sciatic nerve, but it was the cutaneous lateral femoral. It's a feat.
Subcutaneous adipose lateral femoral.
That's actually not a made up word. That's really what it was.
Yeah.
It sounds bullshit, but that's what it was. Anyways, and my leg was on fire, and I'm still sort of dealing with that now that cycling has slowed down into the fall. I'm realizing I better get back to stretching.
I think my hair loss is actually associated with cycling, but that's all I got. So
that's fair enough.
I get some back stuff every once in a while. That's it.
I would say that's age related. I don't have any cycling injuries. No, because we don't. Other than random skin loss, we don't have.
You know what I find? Yeah. No, because it's the same repetitive motion. Even you switch different bikes, but let's face it, and I find my body's probably adapted to that over the years, but at the expense of something else, right? So
sure.
Those imbalances, I'm pretty sure, are there.
Yeah.
In fact, I know they are.
Yeah. Sometimes just switching up a bike, because you can have that different position.
Absolutely.
It's just that little bit different.
Yeah.
And
again, which is why I know my body actually changes as I switch over to cross country skiing,
yeah.
And then changes back in the spring.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
Some of my older road bikes I can't ride as comfortably because they're longer and they're more aggressive.
Yeah.
But that's an age thing, I think.
All right, fellas. Well, let's wrap this up. I could talk to you guys for days, I think.
But everyone would fall asleep. Or there we are. Wait, they're already asleep.
No. So these are going to be your Bell Lab questions. If you don't know, you can just pass. What's your 15-second power?
No idea.
Not really sure. A bunch.
Today.
Do either of you have power meters?
It's not on the bike I ride.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That's awesome. How did you take your coffee?
Oh, I actually roast my own beans. At home, so I'm a latte guy. There's a little bit of maple syrup in there.
Okay.
Black.
Attaboy.
I got the wrong answer?
No. You get extra bonus points as you roast your own.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Raisins and cookies.
No.
Only problem, not enough raisins.
Huh. My God. How are you guys friends? pineapple on pizza.
Yeah.
Whatever, sure.
Okay. Fruit and beer.
What?
Rattlers.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, that counts.
Yeah.
What's your favorite band?
Come Back to Me.
Can't help you. Don't know.
Okay, you're not a music guy.
That is so hard
I
to pick one.
I am a music guy. I could not tell.
Like Desert Island?
Yeah, even a top three. Give me your top three.
Oh.
Which is funny because we both love music so much, but that is such a hard question to go narrow down. And then I'm going to give you 80s stuff, and people are like, oh my god, that guy's old.
What's the first band that pops to mind?
Stone Roses.
I've been listening to pause and I think of his name. I've been listening to Bob Dylan lately.
Okay. What was the first piece of music you purchased? And
White Elephant Sale in Aurelia when I was a little kid, probably in grade 5, was Sean Cassidy album.
Okay.
Secondhand.
Some vinyl?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember.
I have a jukebox, my friend, at my house.
Nice.
78s.
What was the first one you remember? Do you remember? Like, have any recollection of buying music?
Not much. I remember I bought a Dizzy Gillespie album.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Dave Brubeck was the first album I purchased. I was 4 years old.
I remember because it stood out. But no, I don't remember.
Nah, that's cool. All right, guys. Thank you very much for this. I really appreciate it. If you guys would be game for it, we'll...
How come you don't have to answer those questions?
That's how this works, man. Oh. Thanks so much, guys. Once again, I want to thank Oren Bowser, Jamie Herbst, just awesome guys. If you've ever ridden with them, you know what I mean. And I'm sorry, we got a little off topic and we kind of bounced around topics there with the Velodrome and BMXing and all that stuff. And I'd love to chat with those guys again. We're on the socials at All Wheels Pod. You can find us on Amazon Music, Spotify, and iTunes. We are All Wheels Rolling. If you got an email, comments, feedback, it's allwheelsrolling@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks, folks. Have a great day.